some nice experience at a concert or a fine dining in a Michelin star restaurant, it has to be there, right? So we need to really address what makes sense for the customer. That's smart. And it has to be simple. And this goes back to the contactless experience. If you start struggling with the payment experience, you'll switch to some other ways, right? Mm-hmm. Of paying. And so everything we do is to try to make it as simple as possible from a user experience.
Herzlich willkommen beim B19 Payment Podcast. Ihr findet uns auf allen gängigen Podcast-Plattformen und wenn euch der Podcast gefällt, bitte abonnieren nicht vergessen. Ich, euer Host Roland Doch, möchte euch recht herzlich willkommen heißen. Heute haben wir eine ganz besondere Situation. Ich hoffe, alle Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer werden das danach auch mir schreiben wieder, so wie immer. Ich möchte mich noch in dem Zusammenhang bedanken für das wirkliche umfangreiche Feedback, das ihr mir gegeben habt in den letzten Wochen. Heute machen wir einen englischen Podcast. Wir haben heute Martin Sprengsel, mein Kollege von B19, ist dabei. Und wir haben einen Star, würde ich sagen, dabei. Und jetzt switche ich in Englisch. Today, we have our guest is Bryce van der Walle from Mastercard, AVP. Please give us a really short introduction about your person, please.
Good morning. It's a pleasure to be here. So Bryce van der Walle, I worked at Mastercard for the last 20 years, originally from Belgium. Also have grandparents from Germany, because I think of interest for the folks. So I do understand a bit of German, but okay. I'm unfortunately going to make it in English.
Yeah, that's great. Martin, you want also say some words about your person for new listeners in this podcast, for example?
So Roland, nice to be back here. I had a couple of times the pleasure to...
More than one year.
Oh, that's amazing.
I look today in the
No, but it's great to meet you, Bryce, here. And my name is Martin. I'm working as an executive in the fintech and banking world and very happy to be here with P19 and have a great hour with you, Bryce.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, I think we start. We have many topics today. Bryce, can you also introduce us about Mastercard? Because you are the person that I can say you know about Mastercard figures and something else. Please give us a really short introduction about it.
Okay, I'll try. Mastercard is a company that is almost 60 years old. It's a brand that everybody knows. We have about 3.5 billion, so I'm insisting, billions of cardholders, people that have a Mastercard card in their wallet today across the world. We work with 27,000 banks that are all connected to the Mastercard network. And we, with that network and all these partners, together with the 200 million merchant location where you can pay with your Mastercard, we process about 160 billion transactions on an annual basis. So that's a very short description now.
And when did you start working in the payment industry? That's, I think, also important for us to know.
This coming January, I'll celebrate my 20 years anniversary at Mastercard. I started at our headquarters, European headquarters in Waterloo, Belgium.
Okay. And when you start, what would be your first impressions in this case?
Oh, now you ask me to go back, verify my memory. But my first impression was that we were actually making the magic happen. When you, as a consumer, you're traveling across the world and you want to pay with your card, it's a little bit magical because you don't really know what's happening behind the scene. But actually it works and you can go from Vienna here to New York with your Mastercard and it works. And, you know, it's sort of a mystery. And so that was my first impression. Working at Mastercard was making somehow magic for the people to be able to pay across the world.
And if you look now back, the banks and the people there, what is your, I would say, history or what you're thinking about this interchanges now?
We are a franchise and a network business. So what I always say to the people is that we are nothing without our partners, right? I mentioned the 27,000 banks, financial institutions that we're working with. We're also working with a lot of large merchants, also PSPs, gateways, all these stakeholders in the ecosystem that are making it possible for transaction to flow through the network. And so my after so many years, I'm really convinced that this is what makes it happen, right? So we are nothing without our partners. And so this is what we need to cherish the most.
I would say let's jump into now and the future. Mm-hmm. So can you quickly describe your job currently and what are you looking at? So what's on your table on a daily business?
So my job, my scope is Europe. So I cover what we call our core product for Europe. And that means everything which is a prepaid debit credit card, but also everything that relates to the digital agenda. So making sure that you can pay online as a consumer is also within my remit. Scaling the so-called acceptance, meaning how many merchant location, how many places you can pay with your MasterCard is also under my remit. So this is the scope that I cover today.
So you are looking at a very, I would say, mature market. So Europe, of course, has a lot of abilities to pay, but a lot of opportunities. Mm-hmm. So we have a fragmented kind of market. So I assume with you and with MasterCard, this is one of the best markets to tackle, what I would like to say. So when we take a look at the US market, it's one language and I wouldn't say one legal system, but basically it's a bit simpler. Mm-hmm. But how do you judge Europe and the opportunities? Do we have a strong way to grow currently, or where do you put it on a global landscape?
So based on the 20 years of experience I think that I have, Europe has always been at the forefront. When it comes to technology in the payment space, Europe has always been at the forefront, right? You can think about the EMV chip. This is coming from Europe. You can think about contactless. This is coming from Europe. You can think about 3DS, secure code. This is coming from Europe. Now, when we talk about things which are maybe a little bit more recent, tokenization, network tokenization, this is also coming from Europe. So all these things that are now or later on adopted by other regions like the US or Latin America are all coming from Europe. So it's not only from a technological standpoint, right? So who's inventing the technology, but also who's implementing the technology and making things work. You mentioned the difference between the US and Europe. We have, of course, so many markets, but we do have one central regulator, right? In Brussels, that is driving a lot of the things that we need to do from an industry perspective, that is also helping sort of harmonizing what is happening from a regulatory standpoint in Europe. So we try to stay as close as possible to the regulators, to the people in Brussels, and have good discussion with them to explain them what are the kind of challenge opportunities that we have. So yeah, Europe, in summary, from a payment perspective, is a very interesting place to be.
Yeah, I can absolutely copy that. So I moved my career back here to Europe just because I think it's a very challenging market also, but one with a huge potential to grow. So I love it to work here, to be honest. So you mentioned a couple of products that are recently having been launched or they are coming up. Can we discuss a bit more about, for example, I've recently discovered Click to Pay. Let's use this one first. What is your angle on Click to Pay? And where do you also see the opportunities to grow with Click to Pay? Perhaps can you give us a bit of an angle and what's the game changer behind it? Also banks, merchants, whatever you like.
So I like to take a step back. I think if you look at how we've been working and shaping the payment world, you can see that in the physical world, in the card present world, we've been doing a really good job. Everybody, and especially here in Austria, knows contactless. Everybody's using contactless. It took us a while, right, to get there. But now people can pay seamlessly, frictionless, no fraud, no nothing. It's so easy, right? Whether it's with your plastic or with your phone, contactless is everywhere. It works perfectly. If you look at for a moment now at the digital world, so online transaction, and which frankly we can pay online since 20 years, but the way things are happening, right? There's a lot more friction. It takes you as a consumer and also as a merchant, it takes you a lot more effort and time to be able to complete a transaction. So our goal as a company, and together with the partners, with the merchant, the stakeholders, like the PSPs, the gateways, again, everyone, is to try to have a similar experience in the digital world than in the physical world. So mm-hmm. we could say we want to export contactless into the digital world, if you like, from an experience standpoint. And so this is where technology like tokenization, meaning being able to get rid of the manual PAN entry. So manual PAN entry means entering your card credentials, right? Physically entering those 16-digit number into the checkout window from your favorite merchant. This is something which is creating a lot of friction, takes a lot of time. You need to take your card out of your wallet, read it, type it in, change, correct the error you're making. So with tokenization, we can actually make that step disappear. We want to have all the transaction tokenized by 2030. So that's like almost tomorrow. And that means in practical terms for consumers, in 2030, you will no longer need to enter your card credentials into the system, into the checkout process, which can seem a little bit scary if you think about it, but that's going to drastically improve the user experience. How then the next question is, how do you make it work, right? Because somehow you need to have those credentials available so that you can check out, right? You can make a payment. And this is where Click2Pay comes in, right? Click2Pay, you can see this as a directory where the card credentials are stored in a safe manner and tokenized so that no one with bad intention can capture them and do something that you don't want them to do with, which will then be accessible for the authorized parties by the gateways, by the PSPs, and by the merchant that are certified to retrieve your card credential and then display them to you as a consumer so that when you will be checking out from your favorite merchant, automatically your card credentials will be appearing with all the little X's that are hiding the actual number. And behind that, you have a token that is then being used to process the transaction. So this is something that will have two major benefits. One, removing the friction, because mm-hmm. you no longer need to introduce your card details. It will be retrieved automatically, but also it's going to increase the approval rates for the merchants, because again, removing that friction and with the issuers, the bank of the card holders, recognizing those tokens, feeling confident about it, they're much more likely to approve the transaction. And this is one of the biggest challenges that the community has today, is to ensure that all these online transactions get approved, right? We have a rate, we're almost 99% of approval rate when we're in the physical world, right? With contactless, 99% of the transaction are approved by the issuers. If you move to the digital world, you have only 79, so 20% less of transaction gets approved. So these represent millions of transactions, billions of euros of potentially lost sales for the merchant. So anything that we can do to improve that is obviously of benefit for the merchant. So this is why we see now a lot of merchants moving to tokenization, moving to Click2Pay, because they see the benefit on their bottom line, essentially.
And can you give us one sentence about security? Because what I hear between or read between the lines is when you take away a bit from users actually to have the responsibility to type the correct card details in and so on and so forth, normally you also have a change in security layers, basically. So that, or can you give us just your angle on that topic? As we are in Europe, it's a quite important topic all the time.
Sure. So if you look at the card details, this is providing an access to your sensitive financial data, right? It's connecting to your debit account or your credit account, whatever is the source of funding behind. And it's a number that is readable, and anyone that has access to it can, of course, you have layers of protection. We're doing 3DS secure code or PIN validation, whatever. But there's potentially a risk that someone intercept that number and process or try to make a transaction which is not, which is fraudulent. Right? Mm-hmm. So by removing those numbers and replacing them by a token which has a cryptogram associated to validate this is a real token, you're removing the options for fraudster, for criminal, to intercept those sensitive financial account data and use it somewhere else. So this is a way, if you like, to put the card credential into a safe, right, that is protected from external access and therefore providing more security for consumers and for merchants. And ultimately, because issuers are more confident that there is no fraud, they're also more likely to approve the transaction and therefore increasing the approval rate for the merchants.
For our listeners, the issuers are the banks. In general,
exactly, the one that are issuing the cards to the consumers. Correct. Yes,
yeah. And so we have tackled now all three viewpoints, basically the end users who have a better user experience, bringing contactless into e-commerce.
Exactly.
Use this analogy. I love it very much. And we have the issuers, the banks covered. So for them, it's a rise in quality. It's a better product experience. And we have the acceptance side of the merchants. It makes sense. Roland.
Yes. And what we also discuss, the biometrics, because what you also say every time is in the combination with tokenization and biometrics. Can you give us more about this information? Because it's really interesting to hear from your side.
Sure. Yes. No, and so if you, again, if you compare the way the digital world work versus where the physical world functions today, when you do a transaction in the physical world, it happens that you are requested to introduce your PIN, right? Your four-digit PIN on the terminal, right? To validate that you are who you are. The industry has sort of replicated that process in the online world. And some markets are different, but in you see a lot of markets in Europe where you're still being asked a password. Right. So four-digit numbers, eight-digit numbers, you get it over SMS, or you have to, you know, use a little device dedicated for you where you have to type in a number and then you insert your card, they give you another number. I mean, we've tried to replicate that chip and PIN experience in the digital world, but it has also created a lot of friction because people would forget their password, they would not receive the SMS, or that would not be working, right? And so you have a lot of drops in the transaction. And again, this is painful for the merchant that are not able to sell the goods to the consumers. Now, the good news is that thanks to biometrics, right, facial recognition or fingerprint on your mobile, on your tablet, on your laptop, it is now possible to authenticate and validate the identity of the consumers, right, in a much more friendly way than having to use a password. And it's also much more secure, right? A password can be stolen, can be hacked. It's much more difficult to hack and steal your biometrics, yes. Right? and this is why now, as an industry, our goal is to move away from passwords and move to biometrics as the way to authenticate yourself. Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about what we call pass keys. Mm-hmm. It's a standard that has been created by the FIDO body, which essentially defines how you use biometrics with the purpose of authenticating people online. So that's going to massively improve the way the checkout works in the online world, right? So if you combine biometrics or passkeys with tokenization and click to pay, you can essentially get rid of the manual PAN entry, the manual entry of your card numbers. So that's one part that disappears. And then when we need to authenticate yourself, we need to validate your identity. This is done leveraging biometrics, and you know, you don't have to have that separate process with the password, etc. So we're really removing all the frictions that is existing today, so that ultimately, yeah, you have that contactless experience in the digital world.
I loved it very much because merchants in general tend to feed us back also on our forums at the payment festival or at the payment circles, that they think about payment as a quite complex topic. Mm. So in your introduction, you said, yes, on the surface, it's very simple and smooth, but beyond that, it's high-end technology quadrupled, more or less. Yeah. So I love it when people also see the value in innovations of simplifying things, but also raising the bar of security. Because back in the days, we have seen with technology a lot of simplifying, but sometimes it was not for the better good. Mm. But in payments, I loved it so much. It's all the time also increasing not only the user journey, but also the safety and the security of the end consumers. And that's something I think is very valuable also to bring this message to merchants that they have here tools that are getting improved and they should take a look at it.
Yeah, so as a company, we always follow three principles.
Okay.
Which are, and that is, those three principles we use it across the board, right? When we talk about physical, digital, and tomorrow AI payment, it's always the same principle. It has to be smart, has to be simple, and it has to be safe. By smart, we mean it has to address the need of the customer. If the customer wants to pay with a prepaid account, a debit account, or a credit account, if he needs benefits when he's traveling or he wants to enjoy some nice experience at a concert or a fine dining in a Michelin star restaurant, it has to be there, right? So we need to really address what makes sense for the customer. That's smart. And it has to be simple. And this goes back to the contactless experience. If you start struggling with the payment experience, you'll switch to some other ways, right? Mm-hmm. Of paying. And so everything we do is to try to make it as simple as possible from a user experience. Everybody hates payment, right? When it comes to the moment of payment. I mean, we love it because this is the industry we work, but when you have to pay, this is a painful process. This is a painful moment. So let's make this as short and as quick as possible. A little bit like when you get an injection. And the third one is safe. Right? We've been working really, really hard as a company for the last 60 years almost to create the trust in the two intertwined circle, right? Our little orange and red logo that is giving the confidence to people that they can pay at that particular merchant when they travel. They see the logo on the store, on the restaurant, on the hotel, and they know they can pay with their MasterCard in confidence. And same thing, when the merchant, the hotel owner or the restaurant owner see you coming with your card in, let's say, in the US or in Japan, they don't really care where you're coming from as long as you can show them that you have a MasterCard with those two little intertwined circle. They feel confident. They'll serve you the dinner. They'll let you sleep in their hotel and they're fine, right? It took 60 years to build that trust. Mm-hmm. But it's because it's safe that people feel confident. And so whatever we do, we always focus on this third pillar of security and safety so that it's across the board and people will remain super confident that they can use it, they can accept the card. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned one word in the last couple of sentences, which was AI, that we came across. So I think everybody in this year, last year, is talking about this topic, but we would like to bring it to the table from a payment point of view, mm-hmm. of course, the P19 talk. So in our perspective, we have seen a lot of discussions, sometimes products, prototypes, and initiatives around agentic commerce. So I would like to start from the top for our listeners, because I expect that not many of them can relate to this word. Can you start really from top down when you get a new employee tomorrow or Monday in your office and you brief him? What would you, or her, what would you say?
Yeah. So first of all, I would say this is a very exciting topic. I think we are living a revolution, literally, in how people interact now with online. For the last 20 years, people have been doing their search on Google. I still remember the day my sister called me. I was sitting in an internet cafe in Germany, and she told me, "Hey, have you tried Google?" And I was like, "Google? No, I don't know." So I start and type Google and search something. And then I saw the world opening in front of my eyes. What is happening now with all these agents, right? OpenAI, Perplexity, you name it. It's the same thing. People are now, and we see the stats where we see people moving away from the traditional Google search to the AI agent. because the quality of information they're receiving, the way it is structured, it's much better. And whatever you ask them, you can find an answer that is meaningful, that is making sense, and that can help them solving their questions, right? And much more than what a Google search could do so far. And what we see now is that people are gradually looking for example, if they want to do a trip or they want to purchase something, they're asking the agent, hey, could you please provide me a recommendation? I want to travel with my family. I have 4 kids. I'm going to do a trip during summer. I'd like to spend no more than €X,000 for my whole family. Can you please provide a recommendation of where, when, how, etc.? And the AI agent are now capable of providing that information in a very compelling manner with a lot of recommendation, what should be the hotel, what should be the restaurant, what should be the place you visit, etc., etc. The only missing piece today, or I should say until 2 or 3 days ago, was the ability for the agent to complete a payment. Mm-hmm. So they would be able to tell you, hey, here's the recommendation. This is where you could be going, etc. This is the price for the airline ticket. But if you ask them, oh, fantastic, could you please book this for me now? The agent would say, oh, no, you need to go to that particular website to book directly for yourself. But which is fine. But why not improving further the experience? And then the agent tells you, hey, should I book it for you? Would that make sense for you? And then, making your life even easier, you could just have the agent booking everything for you on your behalf. And this is where things are
That's impressive.
Changing drastically, because it means that you're no longer going to go directly to the website, but you're going to use the agent. A little bit like in the past, where you would go to a travel agent and they would book the flight, the resort, and maybe a restaurant, a taxi for you. You would pay only the travel agent, but now you're just paying through the agent and they will do the rest.
That's exactly the difference. So you don't pay a single agent, at least that's what I expect currently. Mm-hmm. But you get access to the whole world, basically, that is connected then to the agents. Could you, together, can we reflect, like, what again does it mean from a perspective let's say, users and merchants, perhaps also from you as a scheme? What is changing?
So I would first say what is not changing. Mm-hmm. The three principles I was mentioning before. It has to be smart. So we have to make sure that it's working for consumers and that they know how they can interact with those agents. It has to be simple. The user experience has to be simple, because otherwise you create friction. And it has to be safe. Right? So it's not because suddenly you have new stakeholders in the value chain, right? The agent and maybe some of their providers that are coming into the mix, that you don't want to maintain that trust within the ecosystem. And so we will continue to apply those principles. Now, you said it's changing a lot of things. Right? So we have those agents that were not known, if you like, a couple of months ago or years ago to the payment ecosystem. So what we are doing as a company, we are onboarding those agents, we are certifying them, and we're working so that we bring transparency to the ecosystem, that you, Martin, if you're performing a transaction through an agent, your bank that has issued a card to you will be able to know that this transaction went through an agent. And so that brings transparency. They know what's going on, because maybe you book a travel and you have a hotel booked, an airline booked, a taxi booked, a restaurant booked. And today in the transaction flow, all these different merchants are visible for the issuer, right? For the bank of the customer, so that they can say, okay, this makes sense. I know Martin travels to those high-end luxury hotel, and therefore it makes sense that he booked that particular brand. So they have all their anti-fraud system, this information to make sure that you're safe as a customer. But now if suddenly it gets replaced by an agent, they will just see an agent name into the transaction flow without having that sort of transparency anymore. So this is why we want to make sure that that we introduce transparency and we certify the agent to make sure that these guys are legit, because this will also help fighting against potential criminal risk, right?
Because it's also important for the liability shift, though, in this case, behind of this all things.
Yeah, so that's the other, it's a very good point. And this is the second thing that we will be doing is capturing the intent, and this is a very important word, the intent of consumers. Right now, you would be booking the trip, and it's a one-to-one relationship between one merchant, one transaction, right? Potentially, now with an agent, you could have five or 10 different merchants behind one transaction. So if, for example, an agent goes a little crazy, has an hallucination, like we say, and starts booking a trip to Costa Rica instead of the US while you were trying to go to the US, you need to have a process for you as a consumer to be able to say, hey, actually, it was not my intent to go to Costa Rica. My intent was to go to the US. So we're going to work with those agents to collect that original intent, store it, and make sure that, of course, making sure we are compliant with all the consumer regulation, data protection, etc. It's not about capturing data for the sake of capturing data, but it's about to make sure that if something doesn't go according to plan, there is a trace that we can use so that you know, the banks, the issuers, the acquirers can then do what we call a chargeback. So it's what we provide as a payment guarantee, if you like, to our payment protection to consumers, so that if something goes wrong when they've done a payment with MasterCard, they can contact their banks and say, hey, actually, I was going to the US and now I have this plane ticket for Costa Rica, so can you please help me? And so with that intent, initial intent captured, we'll be able to put a process in place to make sure consumers are still confident and feeling trust about the whole process.
But that's for me, in my mind, it's a huge field of work, a huge market opening up. But in the beginning, I think there are investments to be done also on a couple of side of things. Also quality gates, as you said, most likely different in different regions of the world. But in the end, what you said, nobody knows what I talk to an agent. So we need to make sure that somebody understands correctly what I'm thinking and then telling, and basically in old fashioned way, put it to paper. Nobody's allowed to read the paper, basically, but we need to make sure somebody has a contract that is formally signed to say, I want to buy the plane ticket.
Yeah, and so it's truly a revolution. And right now, I think we are at the beginning. You use an agent, but I'm sure many of our listeners today are also merchants who are thinking, hey, I should have my own agent because I can make the experience of my customers better, right? And so you as a customer, as a consumer, you could talk to a merchant agent. But you could also imagine a use case where tomorrow, me as a consumer with my own agent, it is talking to the merchant agent.
Correct. Right?
So you'll have agent to agent conversation, you'll have consumer to agent conversation, you'll have agent to merchant. You're going to have so many different type of conversation that it is very, very important to put structure around it, that we have clear rules, clear guidelines. Because otherwise, again, consumers will not feel that they can trust this ecosystem, and then it's not going to work. So this is what we've been doing for 60 years, putting trust into the ecosystem, they have clear rules, clear guidelines, clear protection for consumers so that everybody knows the rules of the game and feel confident about it.
So, but back in the days, so a couple of years ago, the word voice commerce was in everybody's ears who talked about innovation. What you just told us is basically the comeback of voice commerce, I would say, because I've seen agents being mainly fed by voice and not so much anymore by typing in. And therefore, this could be it, or what do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, look, whatever makes most sense for consumers, right? Yeah. I think technology has drastically improved. So there are ways now to even further improve the customer experience. Some people will like to use their voice. Some people will prefer to use text. I mean, it has to be smart. That's the first principle. So whatever makes sense for mm-hmm. consumers, we'll have to follow that.
This trend is driven from the customers, I say, or consumers. Yes. What can you give us as information from the side, from the banks? What are the technologies mm-hmm. or trends or also from the banks, issuers, acquirers? What do you think? What would be in the future?
Yeah. Oh, and we get a lot of questions from our issuing partners, so the Bank of the Consumers, from the acquirers. They all wondering, okay, this is like a major shift. What should I do? And banks have a lot of priorities, a lot of things to deal with, a lot of regulation, a lot of obligation. So clearly this is creating a huge amount of question on the bank side. So what we're trying to do is obviously help them figuring out what should be their positioning. So we have a consulting part of our business that is helping banks to figuring out, okay, what should be my positioning? Should I go first? Should I go now? Should I go later in this space so that they're prepared for the future? Now, the second thing is about what should be the technology that they should implement. Because if you think about it, agent will be very quickly leveraging tokenization and click to pay. They will be displaying cards for consumer, right? We're going to leverage tokenization to make sure that the agent-based transaction are safe, right? Avoiding, again, to have clear financial account data available for anyone else. So we will get rid of those PAN numbers. But in order for the banks, for the issuers to be available as a payment method, when you as a consumer want to pay through an agent, they will need to have the capability to do tokenization, and they will need to support click to pay, because that's going to be the standard that is being used by the agent, right? So as a bank, as an issuer, you want to think, okay, how am I future-proofing my bank, my cards for these kind of use cases? Mm-hmm. And it's no longer enough, unfortunately, it's no longer enough to just have a card number on a card. You need to be able to support that use case of tokenization, of click to pay, so that your card will appear in the agent interface and you and your consumers will be able to select it and be able to proceed with the payment. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really about, that's the first thing they can do as an issuer. Mm-hmm. And then as an acquirer, the bank of the merchant, I think they have a role of supporting, providing advice to the merchant on how their merchant can then deal with this change tokens. Obviously supporting the token, supporting click to pay, but also understanding how they can now adjust their business in order to deal with that change, right? So there's a bit of a consulting work that can be done as well. Mm-hmm. I think that's also a big opportunity, because most merchants are wondering, okay, what do I do now, right?
I think merchants currently mm-hmm. also interpret a lot of a change in user behavior. So you mm-hmm. normally do not come from the angle of payments, but you come from the angle of let's say market trends or demographic trends and so on and so forth. Or behavior change, so to say. So when people started using phones and so on. But randomly you come from the payment experience because it's the last in the chain, so to say. So I've already decided my wish. I selected the store and so on. So the payment journey starts actually when everything else has already been mm-hmm. done. And that's interesting because payment, in my perspective, delivers very often a lot of insight to tell you how the economy moves, how people change mm-hmm. basically. And it would be a great starting point actually to analyze demographics. And as you said, there is most likely a lot of consulting business to be done for merchants, but where they can also drag a lot of information for their future business out of the payment industry. I think that's a very interesting perspective to mention that. Roland, where are we standing currently? We have over 14 questions. Help me, please, on where we are looking at.
I think also really important for the listeners, the innovations also for the, in the future for MasterCard. Can you tell us about what would be the next steps in this case? What would be the next innovations?
There are lots.
I know.
So I obviously... What we are doing here around the tokenization and click to pay is the foundation for much more. I mean, I presented click to pay to you as a sort of new way of checking out from the merchant, but it is a lot more. It's actually a repository. It's a directory in which we are storing, let's say, consumers' payments credentials. And that can then be retrieved with an email or a phone number. And so the checkout process or the checkout at the merchant is one use case. The agent pay is another use case. But we will also be able now to provide other use cases like peer-to-peer. So me paying you money directly. We had a nice dinner yesterday at the restaurant. I owe you 25 euros. Hey, just give me your phone number or your email address and I can push money directly to you if you are in the click to pay directory. So we are working on these things. We are also trying to provide flexibility to our customers. We as a company, we have the capabilities to support many underlying payment rails. So we have the traditional card rails, prepaid debit credit rails. But we also have open banking capabilities. Mm-hmm. We have what we call ACH capabilities, so processing credit transfer or direct debit. We've made a couple of acquisitions in the past. And why did we do that? We did that because we know that depending on many different factors, people will have preferences to use open banking or credit rails, card rails or ACH rails, depending on the use cases, right? And so now what we want to do, because ultimately you, Martin, you're one and one unique person, but maybe with different needs, we want to make sure that through that directory with only your email, or only your phone number, you will be able to perform those different payments regardless of the, you know, the rail that you choose. So if tomorrow you want to pay a bill, a utility bill, and you prefer to use a credit transfer to do that, you'll be able to do that leveraging that directory.
That's interesting.
So it's really about what, this is what we call internally our multi-rail strategy, which means regardless of what is the underlying payment infrastructure that you want or need to use to do the payment, you don't need to worry about all the technicalities on how you get access to it, et cetera. It's going to be a simple access through an email or a phone number.
That's a change?
It's a big change.
That's a real big change, to be honest. So from a consumer perspective, of course, but for industry, even more, so to say.
It's always about removing the friction and making it as smart as possible.
That's huge. It's really huge because that's what people want to do. Actually, I have so many different cases where I need to move money. It can be in my online banking, can be a bill, as you said. It can be the dinner the day before, but back in the days, you always had your preferred, I called it preferred payment method that I learned while growing up using it for this or that use case. And what you are telling us is basically we blur that picture a bit and it gets more convenient for me. I drag one card, it works every time, basically.
Yeah, we'll try to make it clear, not blurry. But you got it. I think this is the point. We don't want you to remember your IBAN number or your credit card number anymore. I think you should just remember your email or your phone number, and that should be enough for you to pay all the different cases.
Right? Oh, that's cool. Okay, then let's move to the second part of the questions, I would say. So, but our listeners are also very interested. We are including also young executives or people who come from universities to make the payment industry attractive. And It is very interesting for people, but they sometimes don't get a feeling like what is payment, because as you said, it's very frictionless and I don't touch it very often and only from an outside perspective. You're well connected internationally. So what we have heard from your CV, what advice do you give also the young people starting a career in payments? Can you put there some nuggets into our podcast?
I think really important for the listeners are the starting point, for example, because they want to know, what can I do now? They start after the education with to want to go to work now, and what does it exactly mean now for the guys?
Yeah, sure. And if I'm perfectly honest, when I started working at MasterCard, I had very little idea of how this was going to unfold.
But can you share, is it okay to share the story? Like, how did you end up there in a positive kind of way?
Yeah, I was working for a large consulting firm, and suddenly I got this call from a headhunter, and they said, "Hey, why don't you come and work for MasterCard? Or would you be interested in working for, at the time, Europe International," which was a name that me as a Belgian born in Brussels didn't ring a bell, because we were very used to Maestro, but Europe International or MasterCard didn't mean anything for us or for me back then, because it simply, the brand did not exist in Belgium. But I went through the interview and I was successful going through it. And I'm still very thankful for my manager back then who gave me the opportunity. What I think people, if people are interested in payment, and especially in our company, what makes it very exciting is that I see it as a window on the world. We have 200 merchant locations. We're present in more than 220 markets. We have 35,000 colleagues around the world, and we share the same culture. And our goal as a company is to make sure commerce works everywhere at any time, and obviously in a safe way. And it gives you a feeling of belonging to the world, because you see how things are happening. You understand, of course, what is influencing the world. You have access to a lot of very interesting discussions around the geopolitics, the sovereignty. But you're making people essentially move around and buy the things that they want to buy and make the whole work function. So that is the part which to me is very exciting of working for such a great and international company. So that is, I think that's in a nutshell why I'm excited. And originally from Brussels, but I had grandparents coming from Germany. So I've always felt very European, and I was always very fond of having people being able to interact between each other and know each other and mixing culture, etc. And I can't tell you how many different cultures we have at MasterCard, but with so many offices everywhere, I think we're pretty representative of what the world looks like. So that's it's a very exciting world to be in.
Thank you. That's I can only agree to that. So you mentioned Brussels a bit. Sometimes Brussels is also connected to regulations, so to say. Mm-hmm. So one question would be also from our audience. What challenges do you see in the future due to regulations and standards? Because it's not only about regulations, it's more or less about standards that derive from it.
Obviously we are a heavily regulated business.
We are, yes.
And I think this is very fine. It's also helping us to define what is the best thing for consumers and for merchants. I think it makes a lot of sense to have regulation. And it has always been for us an opportunity to further advance the ecosystem. What I think is really important is when we talk with regulators, we make sure that they have the right information on how to balance between, especially if you think about the area of security, because obviously you want to make sure that payment remains safe. But the best way to keep payments safe is to have no transaction, right? But that's not the goal. So we want to make sure that there are transactions happening, and this is why we are helping regulators to understand that there are very smart ways to avoid fraud. When you approach things with AI, with risk-based decisioning tools to protect fraud. So it's a lot about education. It's a lot about sharing information. We also think that, for example, that's a very important message that we share with our regulators, because sometimes we get a lot of questions around, okay, what about data localization? Should we make sure that data stay where they are? We think, on the contrary, being able to share data is a huge advantage to fight against fraud, to fight against criminals, because criminals don't know barriers. They don't know borders. They don't care about borders. They go fast. So it's data sharing is actually a very good thing when you think about making sure your payment remains safe. So. Yes, regulators have a very strong influence on our business. It is completely fine. We've always been partnering with the regulators, whether it's at the Brussels level or at the local level. And we're always happy to share perspective.
Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes regulations also set standards for innovation. So this is something that we've seen back in the days. It's never... how do you say, black or white? It's all the time in between. Roland, you have a question on your mind.
Yeah, if the listeners say, okay, I want to see topics and want to go also on websites or for information, what would you like to say to this? Go to MasterCard on the website. You have many.
We have a lot of indeed on mastercard.com or your local website. We have a lot of information. I mean, we have a whole consulting arm that is providing a lot of information. I mean, most recently, of course, we've issued a lot of reports on how AI will be shaping the world and the world of payment. So that's clearly a first go-to thing, a first go-to website. Sorry. And then for our customers, issuers, acquirers, we have, of course, a lot of data and materials that we are sharing on a constant basis. We even have a MasterCard Academy, which is, of course, it's reserved for our customers, but these are, you know, customized courses, information that our customers can have access to so that they can stay up to date with the latest technology and innovation.
Mm-hmm. Customers in your case, now being products, tell us who, not the names, but which type of customers.
So by customers, I mean issuers, acquirers, sometimes PSPs, gateways, anyone who has basically a contract with us. Right?
Okay. No, I mean, I have a couple of contracts with my card, so they are with my bank.
So I should have started there, but we are a B2B2C company. In this case, I'm talking about the B2B customers.
Yeah. Perfect.
Okay, thank you very much. It would be, I think, so also for the listeners, a really interesting discussion between us. It's now, I'm the timekeeper, I must say. It's from time settlement, it's okay. Thank you very much. And I switch now, Martin, also thank you. Thank you for your participated and also with your questions. I switch now back to Germany. Für alle Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, ich möchte mich herzlich bedanken, dass ihr bis jetzt zugehört habt, weil es, glaube ich, aber heute nicht sehr schwer war, weil wir wirklich einen sehr interessanten Gast gehabt haben. Ich möchte mich nochmal bedanken bei Martin. Und möchte auch sagen, nicht vergessen, wir haben unser Payment Festival, 26. November, in den Sophiensälen. Wenn euch der Podcast gefallen hat und besonders heute auch gut gefallen hat, wie ich am Anfang schon gesagt habe, gebt mir Feedback, das wäre mir ganz wichtig. Ich würde es auch dann weiterleiten am Mastercard, wenn hier Fragen noch auftreten. Es können natürlich bei Konsumenten wird schwierig, aber wie Paul es auch gesagt hat, wenn es Acquirer, Issuer, Banken, aber vielleicht auch Behörden sind, die auch zuhören natürlich bei uns, würde es uns sehr, sehr freuen, diesen interaktiven Austausch zu haben und dann auch weiterzugeben zu Mastercard. Ja, in diesem Sinne. Ich bedanke mich fürs Zuhören, egal wo ihr uns hört, ob es jetzt in der Früh ist, am Abend, zum Mittag. Wie ich immer sage, adieu, so wie man in der Schweiz sagt, tschüss. Und wir hören uns das nächste Mal wieder. Danke, tschüss.